tries to hide his tears from his sibling. After his arrest, Badr, who suffered from...
So Mary Bauer, if you could just tell us what's next in his case.
The judge indicated that she would rule quickly. We are expecting answers from the government. The judge is expecting answers from the government to very specific questions that really go to the heart of our case. Why was he moved in the way, in this secretive way? Why was he picked up for removal to Louisiana and then Texas? We will have until 6 o'clock tomorrow to respond, and then we do expect a ruling relatively quickly from the court.
Mary Bauer, Executive Director of the ACLU of Virginia, and Nader Hashmi, thank you so much for joining us. Nader Hashmi, Professor of Middle East and Islamic Politics at Georgetown University and Director of the Center where Badr Khan Suri was a postdoctoral fellow, Georgetown Center for Muslim-Christian Understanding. And that does it for today's show. A very happy birthday to Dennis Moynihan. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Maria Taracena, Tammy Warnoff, Charina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tay Marie, Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Masood, Anjali Kamat, and Safwat Nazal. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera, Hugh Gran, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, Dennis McCormick, Matt Ely, Anna Osbeck, Emily Anderson, Dante Toreri, and Buffy St. Marie. I'm Nermeen Sheikh with Amy Goodman for another edition of Democracy Now!
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Camp is in session. Join us at the KBOO station on Friday, May 2nd from 6 to 9 p.m. for KBOO's monthly First Friday pop-up gallery event. Come to Camp KBOO and join us around the mic for an evening of live music, artists, vendors, drinks, food, and more. We can't wait to see you there.
Tune in to Locus Focus, a weekly conversation about our place on the planet, every Monday morning at 10 on KBOO Community Radio. Each week, host Barbara Bernstein talks with local, regional, and national experts, activists, and policymakers about climate change, river protection, the transition from fossil fuels to renewable energy, salmon restoration, forest management, and all the other things that are critical to protect our planet. That's every Monday at 10 a.m. on your community radio station, KBOO.
Hey, everybody. This is Michael Van Cleek, Vice President of KBOO's Board of Directors. The KBOO Board is recruiting new directors. KBOO's Nominating Committee is holding virtual information sessions from now through June. All KBOO members are eligible for board election. Black, Indigenous, and people of color are especially encouraged to apply. KBOO's Board of Directors guides the station's strategic plans and represents the interests and visions of our members. More information and meeting times can be found at kboo.fm/boardrecruiting, all one word. Thank you for considering board service.
Support for KBOO comes from KBOO members and Grendel's Coffee Shop, located at East Burnside and 8th Avenue in Portland, featuring coffee, tea, sandwiches, and more. Information at grendelspdx.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, thousands rallied throughout the Portland area on May Day protests on Thursday for more planned this weekend.
A second person has died in Multnomah County Jail this year.
And later, we'll hear from the creator of the Stumptown Savings blog, dedicated to saving Portlanders money on their groceries.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, May 2nd, 2025. I'm Sam Bowman.
And I'm Dave Johnson. Thousands of Portlanders rallied in downtown Portland on Thursday for May Day, or International Workers' Day. KBOO reporter Alan Niven brings us the montage of speeches from the 5051 rally at the Portland State University South Park Blocks.
Do you know the history of this holiday in the United States is one that's been split off from the rest of the world? They've tried to disconnect us as workers from our brethren around the world. We need to take that back. And as we fight against fascism in the United States, we need to make sure that our movement is international. I believe in the power of class struggle unionism. The constant attacks on the environment and the attacks on workers come from the same place. The pursuit of profit and domination by a small number of very rich people and firms who claim to own everything. To these people, the environment that sustains life on Earth is just natural resources, raw materials to be used in the creation of commodities. Human beings, in all of our wonderful complexity, are reduced to tools to be dominated and exploited to generate profit for the owners and investors. By understanding ourselves as workers in the economy, we can build power together in places where we can exercise the most leverage for change, at the sites of extraction, where power is generated and distributed, where products are transported. By workers, I mean workers who are members of unions and non-unionized workers, who are the vast majority of the working class in this country. Over 90% of our workers are ununionized. Nothing is more powerful than coordinated withdrawal of labor.
It's clear as day that this system is rigged for the rich. The people in power love telling us the economy is doing great. But for most working class people who are getting squeezed tighter and tighter to make ends meet, something's not adding up. Prices for the basic things that we need to live are skyrocketing and wages stagnate. Our labor continues to be exploited, enriching the very people that cause wars and famine abroad as their greed continues to destroy Mother Earth. Shame! The richest 1% treat the financial system like a casino, and Trump's policies give the billionaires more and more money to play with. Boo, that's right. It's a crumbling system, and no amount of America First smoke and mirrors can hide this. The ruling class wants us to believe that capitalism is the best we can do, but we know better. And if I can ask one thing of you all today, it would be to seek out an organization that you align with. Because, to quote Malcolm X, we are not outnumbered, we are out-organized.
Mayday, happy!
Mayday!
Happy!
Mayday!
Happy!
Mayday!
Happy!
Mayday!
Happy Mayday to everyone. Happy Mayday to all my union siblings. Happy Mayday to all my comrades. I'm so very glad to be here with you all today. Today is a special day where we acknowledge and celebrate the solidarity of workers around the world. Immigration is a workers' issue. Unless you and your people are indigenous or part of the stolen African diaspora, we are all immigrants to this country. Immigrants are vital members of our workforce and unions. Immigrants pay taxes on which federal, state, and local budgets rely and support the social safety net for all of us. 30.2 billion is spent on ICE and immigrant enforcement, and 2.1 billion is spent on enforcing labor standards. Is that okay? The real threat to workers is corporate greed, not immigrants.
And we don't need to tell you that we've got a fight ahead of us. And this shouldn't simply be a fight to return to normal. Simply electing Democrats and asking them nicely to fight on your behalf is not going to be enough. We aren't interested in going back to where ICE agents support our neighbors quietly instead of out loud on the streets. We're not going back to when the FBI merely intimidated, harassed, and assassinated activists and labor leaders, but left the judges alone. We're not going back to a country that values selling weapons to drop bombs on children in hospitals in foreign nations over education and housing for all. And we aren't interested in maintaining a healthcare system that prioritizes profits over the health and well-being of our fellow workers. Every single tool the Trump regime is using right now to turn the United States into an authoritarian oligarchy was already in place long before he got here. And that's not the world we're going back to.
That was a montage of speeches from the International Workers' Day rally held by the group 5051 on Thursday. Another hands-off rally and march is planned for Saturday by Rose City Indivisible. Organizers say they're protesting against President Trump and Elon Musk and protesting for labor and immigration rights. The rally starts at noon in Portland at Waterfront Park, south of the Hawthorne Bridge, with a march planned at 1 p.m.
A Northeast Portland woman died Thursday, May 1st, in Multnomah County's Inverness Jail. Sharon Lee Watkins was booked into the jail on Monday and was found unresponsive in her bunk Thursday at roughly 8 a.m., according to the sheriff's office. They say life-saving measures were administered by deputies and corrections health personnel. Paramedics continued advanced medical intervention when they arrived on scene. Ms. Watkins was pronounced deceased by responding paramedics. The East County Major Crimes Team will conduct a death investigation along with the Multnomah County Medical Examiner. Ms. Watkins is the second inmate to die in custody in the Inverness Jail so far this year.
A federal court in California issued a preliminary injunction against U.S. Border Patrol, banning them from conducting warrantless immigration stops across the state. In January, Border Patrol drove 300 miles north of the Mexican border to Bakersfield and stopped day laborers and farm workers at a Home Depot parking lot, at a convenience store, and on a highway between orchards. Border Patrol claimed they were conducting a targeted raid on certain criminals, but 77 of the 78 people arrested did not have a criminal history. Fruit growers told the nonprofit newsroom Cal Matters that the laborers who were taken by Border Patrol were hard workers, and some of them had been working on the farms for decades. The ACLU sued on behalf of United Farm Workers, saying the stops violated the Fourth Amendment. The court is still hearing the case, but while it continues, Border Patrol isn't allowed to stop people unless they have a reasonable belief the person has violated immigration law. District Court Judge Jennifer Thurston said in a hearing Monday, quote, "You just can't walk up to people with brown skin and say, 'Give me your papers,'" end quote. Border Patrol attorneys say they're retraining their officers on the Fourth Amendment, which protects people in the United States against arbitrary arrests and unreasonable searches and seizures.
President Trump issued an executive order on Thursday directing the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, or CPB, to end federal funding for NPR and PBS because of ideological bias. It's not something he has the authority to do. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting is an independent corporation of the federal government, and Congress funds it directly. Current appropriations have CPB funded through September of 2027. NPR and PBS are public broadcasters that inform the public free of charge. Most of the funds for public media go to local stations, and in many states, those stations are a critical part of emergency and disaster response systems. KABU Community Radio receives a national syndication grant from CPB that allows for the broadcast of national shows like Democracy Now! The Federal Election Commission unanimously dismissed a bias and electioneering complaint against NPR earlier this week, saying that the public radio network was engaged in a, quote, legitimate press function, end quote. CPB is also suing the Trump administration for firing three of its board members earlier this year.
National Security Advisor Mike Walls is leaving that job to become UN ambassador. Bipartisan Arizona polls find Latino voters dissatisfied by Trump's first 100 days, and Florida mass deportations frighten community members. With more on the story, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
So that is the miracle of modern technology and social media. So that is an exciting moment here.
At a press briefing, State Department spokesperson Tammy Bruce was caught off guard by President Donald Trump announcing Mike Waltz is the new UN ambassador nominee. Initial reports had said Trump would fire the now former White House National Security Advisor for including journalist Jeffrey Goldberg in a Signal group chat about battle plans against the Houthis in Yemen. Secretary of State Marco Rubio will be the acting NSA until a replacement is found. During Trump's first 100 days, he signed nearly 140 executive orders, more than any previous president. Michigan State political scientist Matt Grossman says there's a trend around the world where countries move toward authoritarianism when elected leaders undermine democracy by pushing the limits of executive power.
They see this global pattern where it's not the case that you have to have a revolution to change the governing system. The executive branch takes more and more power. You sort of slowly descend from a democratic starting point.
The president's opponents have filed more than 250 lawsuits against his policies. A bipartisan poll finds Latino voters are frustrated by his first 100 days. Nearly 50% strongly disapprove of Trump's job performance. The top issues they cited are the cost of living and inflation, jobs, and the economy. But Ray Serrano with the League of United Latin American Citizens says about half say they're worried about being targeted for immigration enforcement. He says initial optimism for the administration is quickly dissipating, even among those Latinos who voted for him.
What we thought was securing the border now translates to Kilmar, Abrigo Garcia, Jocelyn Rojo, like these stories that just echo throughout our communities and haunt us. It shows a new face of cruelty and lack of due process.
Serrano says it's possible many Latino voters are becoming disillusioned by both major political parties, but he adds the poll depicts the rise and immediate fall of the possible Trump Latino Democrat. Voters in a number of states also say they're souring on how Trump's mass deportation agenda is being carried out. Florida's Operation Tidal Wave is being described as a success by Governor Ron DeSantis, but immigrant families say the rights of the 1,100 people reportedly taken into custody are being ignored. Renata Bozzetto with the Florida Immigrant Coalition points to what she calls constitutional violations and the lack of information.
When these stories are not given to us with the detail and the transparency that they deserve, we have various questions, including, did these individuals have the right to due process?
Meanwhile, a Texas federal court has struck down the administration's use of the Wartime Alien Enemies Act to deport accused gang members. Judge Fernando Rodriguez Jr. was appointed by Trump and is the first to rule on the merits of using the 1798 law. 19 states are suing the Trump administration for withholding education funding unless they comply with executive orders to end diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. Educators in states like Connecticut say historic underfunding is already causing larger class sizes and lower teacher wages. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin. Then at 6, you'll want to stick around for KBOO's Friday art walk, Camp KBOO, with hosts D. Jamie and Katie Zip. Tonight's weather will have increasing clouds with a chance of overnight rain and a low of 46. Tomorrow's weather will be cloudy with an afternoon high of 61. Today in history, in 1932, novelist, humanitarian, and social activist Pearl S. Buck was awarded the Pulitzer Prize in Literature for her work, The Good Earth. Buck used her skills as an activist for civil rights and women's rights. She also advocated for the developmentally disabled and for cross-cultural adoption of orphans. The quote of the day is from Chinese philosopher Confucius. I hear, I know, I see, I remember, I do, I understand.
A shooting rampage in Minneapolis has left 5 dead, and most of the victims are believed to be Native American. With that story and more, it's Brian Bull with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull. Minneapolis police are investigating 3 shooting incidents that have killed 5 and wounded 2. Most, if not all, the victims are believed to be Native American. Officials have arrested a suspect in a shooting Tuesday night that killed 3 people in the city's south side. The Minnesota Star Tribune says 34-year-old James Ortley was arrested Thursday, though police say other perpetrators may still be on the loose. Here's Minneapolis's chief of police, Brian O'Hara, at a press briefing on the arrest.
The United States Marshal's Office North Star Fugitive Task Force, assisted by FBI SWAT team, executed an arrest warrant on the 1600 block of South 4th Street and arrested James Dwayne Ortley, age 34. This is a significant step forward in what has been an intense and fast-moving investigation into the most violent incident this city has suffered this year.
Ortley's criminal history in Minnesota includes one conviction each for first-degree robbery, second-degree assault, illegal weapons possession, and fleeing police. Minnesota Public Radio reports that at Cedarfield Park, a prayer and drum circle was held Thursday. Dozens attended the event, and local leaders called for an end to the violence. One victim has been identified as 17-year-old Joey Goodwin, regarded as a talented artist. The murders marked the beginning of American Indian Month in Minnesota. A parade and powwow have been canceled. Chief O'Hara calls the shootings outrageous and senseless. Minneapolis police are seeking tips on the shootings that could lead to more arrests. In Southern California, a coalition of Native American tribes, community advocates, and law enforcement are holding their first ever summit to address missing and murdered indigenous people. Danielle Bush is the program director for MMIP San Diego, which will host the summit this Saturday at the Viejas Casino and Resort. She says one of the breakout sessions will be on human trafficking.
What are the warning signs, red flags of that, and what to do if you or a loved one or you just see someone who might be in that situation, what steps you can take, you know, because we're trying to end that heinous crime in the community.
Another breakout session will be with regional law enforcement.
The goal of that is to educate people about the Savannah Act and about the Feather Alert and what are your rights and how to proceed if you have a missing relative or anything that law enforcement can provide support on and building those relationships.
The final breakout session will be on healing and support services specifically for the tribal community. Bush says the San Diego area is close to the U.S.-Mexican border, which poses challenges.
With our proximity to the border and for other reasons, San Diego is a hotspot for human trafficking. I believe, you know, third in the country. It's up there. It's definitely an issue in the community that we've been trying, you know, a multi-pronged approach to attacking.
Bush says MMIP San Diego hopes to grow its resources, so invites anyone in the Southern California region to reach out and connect with the organization. And the Oglala Sioux tribe based in South Dakota has voted to cancel its annual powwow, rodeo, and fair for 2025. This year's Oglala Nation Wachipi was scheduled for early August. This comes after a shooting at the 2024 event, which killed 57-year-old Tom Thunderhawk August 2nd. Despite concerns from the family of the victim, the powwow continued after Thunderhawk's shooting. This year, the Tribal Council has instead allocated a small fund for each of the 9 districts to host local powwows. The event is a major economic driver for the reservation, drawing thousands of tourists from across the nation. You're listening to National Native News. I'm Brian Bull in the KLCC studios in Eugene, Oregon.
A statewide coalition of food pantries is adopting policies to provide Washingtonians experiencing food insecurity with healthy, nutritious foods to help prevent diabetes, obesity, and heart disease. The group is collaborating with the American Heart Association of Washington. Isabel Charlet reports.
Research shows that people experiencing food insecurity often suffer from chronic health conditions due to a lack of proper nutrition. Now a group of Washington food banks is working to change that. The Washington Food Coalition is collaborating with the American Heart Association Washington branch, adopting the association's nutritional guidelines for its local food pantries. Chantal Brooks with New Day Ministries in Bremerton says her group's food pantry found that many of its patrons come from disadvantaged backgrounds.
What prompted us to implement a nutrition policy is we began to notice that many of the people we serve, especially seniors and families with children, were struggling with health conditions like diabetes, heart problems, high blood pressure.
Coalition research shows that pantries with nutrition policies are better able to communicate with and educate donors, collect feedback from customers about their food preferences, and identify and offer healthy foods such as fruits and vegetables. The Heart Association's guidelines aim to help customers battle conditions such as diabetes, obesity, and heart disease by prioritizing fresh, nutritious, and culturally relevant foods. Community Impact Director with the Washington Heart Association, Elaine O'Callaghan, says nutrition policies help food pantries focus on providing good outcomes.
Agencies with nutrition policies felt much more confident in being able to define and discuss healthy foods. A lot of people who run food pantries may have trouble defining what is a healthy food and how will I know it when I see it.
Brooks with New Day Ministries says her group's food pantry uses the Heart Association's nutrition policy as a guide for what food it purchases and collects.
It's not necessarily that we will refuse any food, but it just helps us to focus more on nutrient-dense foods such as fresh vegetables and fresh fruit and nutrient-dense protein.
I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
Some 57% of Portland Metro residents worry about affording their grocery bill, according to a March Oregonian poll. One local journalist is trying to help Portlanders save on their groceries through a new blog called Stumptown Savings. KABU reporter Dejan has more on the story.
Hello, everyone. Here at KABU, we've had the pleasure of speaking with Brian Vance, the founder and editor of StumptownSavings.com and the featured curiosity blog. And Brian is here to tell us about a new way to save on groceries.
So I'm Brian Vance. I am a local journalist here in Portland, been here for about a decade now. And Stumptown Savings is my new newsletter and sort of mini newsroom, newsroom of one, focused on covering Portland's food economy and specifically the grocery scene.
What motivated you to create Stumptown Savings?
So a few different things. The big one, I got laid off, you know, and there's nothing like a layoff to make you take a look at your personal finances and realize you need to budget. But also, like, you know, the economy is kind of squishy right now. The current administration is not the most stable administration. Food prices have gone up across the board in recent years. And it just seemed like if I needed to get more serious about taking a look at, like, how much I was spending on food that I ate, there were probably other Portlanders who needed to as well.
Per USDA, food prices for all food are expected to increase 3.5% in 2025. How can Stumptown Savings help ease the burden of inflation for folks in the Portland metro area?
Yeah, so that's something that I, you know, am really thinking about a lot. And one of the things that I do with Stumptown Savings is I spend a few hours each week looking through the various sales and deals at grocery stores in the Portland area. And so that saves people time and money. You know, it highlights the best prices you can get on things like fresh produce, fresh meat, fresh dairy, stuff like that. The other thing I'm doing is starting some projects to really track the change in prices. So one thing that I've started recently, I call it the Portland Egg Price Tracker, and I am crowdsourcing data from people across the metro area on how much they're spending for eggs. And what's interesting is, you know, over time we'll be able to see how those prices are changing week to week, but also which stores tend to have the best prices on eggs. So even if they don't necessarily have a sale that week, you can expect to get a good deal on them.
What do some of these newsletters include specifically?
Yeah, so each Thursday, you can expect a roundup of the best deals from stores like Safeway and Albertsons, Fred Meyer, QFC, New Seasons, Whole Foods. Winco is an interesting local store that doesn't really do sales, but they do occasionally have like some odd specials. And when I spot those, I'll put those in there. I also include a recipe each week that is designed to highlight some of the sale items and allow you to make a meal for four people, you know, four servings for under $20. So that's something that will be in every issue.
What is the Double Up Food Bucks program?
The Double Up Food Bucks program is this really cool thing that I feel like most Oregonians don't know about, but Oregon actually will double SNAP benefits for purchase of fresh food, so like produce and dairy products and whatnot, at some grocery stores and at almost all farmers markets in the state. So if you go in with, you know, $20 on your SNAP card, you can actually get credit for $40 worth of produce at, like, say, the PSU farmers market.
What are some common misconceptions about healthy and affordable eating that people may have that you can help clarify?
Yeah, I think there's a big misnomer that it costs a lot of money to eat healthily, that it costs a lot of money to eat fresh produce, and that it costs a lot to buy locally. There's actually some interesting data out there that in some cases, it's actually cheaper to buy produce at a farmer's market than it is to buy it in a big grocery store. Now, that's not true all the time. And obviously, there are things at farmer's markets that are really expensive. But what I really hope to help people do is just, you know, take a closer look at what they're buying, at where they're buying it, at how they're spending their money. And specifically, one thing that I want to help people do is figure out how to, you know, shop smarter so that they can, you know, get more out of what they're buying, but then have more money to spend on the things that they really want to do, because most people don't want to spend a ton of time at grocery stores.
Where can folks find out more about Stumptown Savings?
Yeah, so I'm at stumptownsavings.com. So that's where you will find the newsletter. You can sign up for it right there.
The minimum wage in Portland has increased only 50 cents between 2023 and 2024. Given the stagnant wage increases, while also faced with food price inflations, what are your final thoughts on the impact that Stumptown Savings could have for PDX?
Yeah, I really hope that it can help people be able to stretch their dollars a little bit further and not get tricked into spending more than they have to on food. There's a negative perception around coupon culture and deal hunting. And it's not about being cheap. It's about being smart and stretching your dollars and getting the most value out of it. You know, big corporations do this. Why shouldn't you?
And that was Brian Vance, the founder and editor of StumptownSavings.com and the Feed Your Curiosity blog, here telling us about a new way to save on groceries. For KBOO News, I'm Dejan.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, May 2nd, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Alan Niven, Dave Johnson, and Dejan. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Jasmine Moss. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Edwin J. Vieira, and Brian Bull. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Sam Bowman.
And I'm Dave Johnson. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening